This is the real weepy and like tragic part of the story beginning, oh my brothers and only friends.
I'm in for four potential getaway drivers. Go.
No!
But I was told that I could listen to the radio at a reasonable volume.
No!
Excuse me, we have a little bit of a hurry.
Hang on, Voltaire.
It's yet another long series of diversions in an attempt to avoid responsibility.
All I want to do right now is curl up on my couch and sleep and eat brownies that I just made.
I know, that I just want to be a normal Joe that doesn't have a journal, doesn't have a podcast, doesn't have a job that I say in quotes that requires them to not only go to school for hours and hours, do hours and hours of work out of school, but also teach a class for menial pay. I just want to be an everyday Joe that just gets to watch Monday Night Football, like eat a hamburger, and then like go to sleep.
Tried so hard, like week and a half or so, to just kind of come home and not have any cares, because I know so many people at my work and everywhere else in the world. They finish up their work day and they come home and they're fucking automatons. You know, they zone out. They have the 1,000-yard stare like they just got back from Nam. And they just sit there and watch their TV. And so for me, like on Saturday, I got satellite cable because it was cheap as hell. It was like $30 a month, and I get HBO, and I get 8 channels of HBO now, which is actually cool because it's the only thing I watch is that. And then on Fridays, starting this Friday, Battlestar Galactica is back. Can't wait for that.
Thank God. God, it's back. I don't know if I could take any longer without having it in my life.
I know. But see, that's the thing, though, is like your average Joe doesn't go home and watch Battlestar because they'll be too overwhelmed with, like, you know, immense moments, whereas, you know, they could just right now be watching, I don't know, what's the latest NBC bullshit sitcom they got on, you know?
Yeah.
They could go home, zone out, fall asleep on the couch, wake up with drool on them and a thing of scotch in their hand, and then down the scotch and go to bed. That's like the life.
I know, it's really hard to, you know, it's beginning to become hard for me to like realize, you know, how my life is better just because I'm doing stuff I enjoy.
Yeah.
Like, because I really don't want all the stress that I've got. I mean, I've got immense amounts of stress right now and it's just killing me. And I feel like I don't have a minute just to do nothing.
Yeah, well, I think my biggest battle is that I end up doing nothing, but I stress myself out by continually saying, I've got so much to do. And then I just put it all off because I go, you know what, one more day ain't going to hurt that deadline that doesn't really exist. And then next thing I know, like, this Friday I have off work. Can't wait for that day. And I guarantee you, though, it's not even going to be a real day off. I'm probably going to wake up, stress myself out for like 8 hours, do the 30 minutes of work that I could get done any time during the week. that's going to cause all this mess. I mean, it's all self-inflicted. I don't even care anymore.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, we were finishing up issue 2. It's like, wow, we really got this thing done. And, you know, we've got issue 3 coming up in April. And then all of a sudden, issue 2.5 gets self-inflicted.
Oh, do people even know about that?
I don't know, but now they do. And it's like...
Yeah, we're recording right now.
Yeah, I pressed record a while ago. I was just like, whatever. Screw the intro. This is going to be a weird podcast because people are going to download it and they're going to come midway into a conversation.
That's awesome. Welcome to the conversations we have offline typically. All right, well, announce it, I guess.
Yeah, so issue 2 is getting printed right now, and for some odd reason, here we are talking about stress, but we've decided to do an issue 2.5 that is going to come out between now and April, probably winter time, and that's just going to collect
dust.
It's going to sell 0 issues, but what's going to be inside it and that no one will ever see is our online writings from the blog and from our past project called Invisible Summer. And it's going to also have a cover by a comic book artist who we have yet to really, I guess, sign officially, but we're in talks with her right
now. Negotiations are being had. Since obviously it's such a process to negotiate with any comic book artist. They command such a market.
Yeah, so this, so not only are you going to get issue 2 after a year, but you're going to get issue 2.5 because we're trying to make it up to you. And, I mean, we're pretty sure because we actually have a real deadline that issue 3 is going to come out before April. So get ready for an intense period for the journal.
I mean, issue 3 is definitely, it's going to be on task, and there's a specific reason, and that is, unlike these other issues where, not to sound like jerks, but, you know, our deadline was, you know, simply saying, oh, we have a responsibility to our customers, but technically, I don't think we gave a crap this last issue based on how well we did meeting those deadlines. So, but this time, we have a real deadline, which in April we're going to go to the, what's it called? The
Alternative Press Expo.
Right, the Alternative Press Expo, which looks like it's a really cool place to hang out. And, you know, yeah, I wasn't really dogging on comic book artists. I was just joking around about them commanding, you know, such an audience or whatever for us. But the fact is one of our new strategies within our school, but also just our, is to incorporate to go hand in hand with having literature within the pages of the journal, but also to feature these comic book artists. I mean, it's something we always wanted to do in the first place, but now after seeing the success of Jeffrey Brown and seeing how great the cover looked, and then with issue 2 we've got I can't think of his name now. Who's the kid who just did our Brett Herholtz? Yeah, Brett Herholtz. And, you know, both of them are really creative, but I have to admit, you know, they're the ones who brought life to what's inside, because I hate to say this too, but people do judge books by their covers, and we ensure that our covers are judged correctly, and both Brett and Jeffrey gave us a good leg up with getting people to even want to open the journal. That said, you know, it's a good strategy, I think, and I know you agree, but we're going to try to, you know, issue a comic book artist. Hence, we're going to display our stuff at this Comic-Con, which is, it's small press and comic books, but it's all these independent authors and whatnot, and our hope is that we're hoping there's someone out there who understands that the two can go hand in hand and will want to have that hybrid literary journal / comic book medium, you know, try and tap into that market like what we're trying to provide. So we'll see what happens with it, but I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess we're still in the process of figuring out what exactly we are, and I think we're getting closer to that. I mean, you'll see with issue 2 that's a big step forward in terms of just professionalizing our journal, so I think everyone will be pleased with it. And it's huge, it's 168 pages, so you're definitely going to... On to the incredibly important, planned out, thought over topics of today, which
are nil at.
We really haven't. I have a few things that I have to announce. Namely, the huge announcement in the music world. I know my musical preferences are incredibly influential in the world. I mean, when I say I love an album, I mean, it obviously shoots to the top of the iTunes charts. It's happened before, it'll happen again. And I'm officially going to announce that one of my favorite albums of all time, and by saying that I mean probably in my top 10, is Sufjan Stevens' Illinois album, which came out 2005, I think. So it's been out for a good year now. I've had it for the entire year. When it first came out, I was like, eh, whatever. I've been listening to it for an entire year, and just within the past month or so, I've realized that this album just, you know, it's basically like perfection. I mean, there's not a song on it that I would remove, and every song is so distinct and important to the entire album as a whole that it almost defines exactly what an album should be. And it's not just, say, the lyrics or the music you know, or the diversity of the album or the instrumentation or anything. It's every single piece of this album, I think, is just absolutely 10 out of 10 perfect. I really have no complaints about it. And I can't stress enough that I want everyone to listen to this album because I think it is so great.
I listened to it at your behest. I'd actually did a song months ago. I think it was a sneak peek release thing that was on iTunes, but I downloaded the album just recently. I haven't been able to immerse myself as much. I got through two full listenings and then piecemeal the rest. You know, every so often I'll go back to a few key songs on there. But I think what's crucial with Sufjan Stevens is how orchestrated everything is. It's not just like your regular four-piece band. It's like he incorporates this ambience, he's got so many different instruments that are playing, and a lot of them are unconventional. And, you know, there was this kind of trend in 2004, 2005 to have banjos featured in songs now, but he's kind of taken it to a different level. He's not just doing it as just this an accompaniment, but each instrument is a lead instrument, you know? I don't know if you've noticed that in his albums, but it doesn't seem like anything's just there as fodder. It's there because it's an integral part of what's going on. It's a lead guitar playing. It's a lead banjo. It's a lead flute, you know?
Yeah, I think that the key is that it's not excessive or gimmicky, his use of instruments. It's all the way it should be used. And it seems like all his songs are so expertly composed that there's nothing that it's just like, oh, that's so gimmicky and stupid that he's using this sound right now, because you can just tell he's trying to look erudite or something by using it. I mean, it just seems like he is so much more talented than everybody else. I mean, it shocks me.
Yeah, he is by and far leap years ahead of people within, like, with his peers can barely touch him. If any, I can't think of anyone really within that kind of that type of music who even come close to comparing to his style, and just how immersive his music is. And I say this as someone who is somewhat ostracized by the lyrics, but also find how poetic they can be entirely. I mean, it did take me with the other album, the Michigan album. What is it?
Say
Wake
Yes
Up and
to
Say
Michigan or something.
Yeah, whatever it is. And with that album, there's a few songs like The Tramp, which is a really good song, but you kind of have to, if you're going to stand on the side of the aisle where you're like, well, I don't believe in God, Sufjan does, and he's very into the Christian tradition.
Yeah.
And so a lot of his songs deal specifically with that. And the thing is, though, is he doesn't make them exclusive. He still makes them so you can tap into it, because whether you believe in it wholeheartedly or if you want to think of it as good lore, like I do, you can still appreciate the quality of the music, and the lyrics themselves are still great lyrics.
Yeah, he doesn't delve into anything preachy or evangelical. It's more, I guess, sort of just allegorical and sort of. You know, he keeps that sense of the Bible intact, or talking about the Bible intact, that it's allegory and that, you know, he finds meaning in it. So even people like us who are atheists can look at it and still sort of see the poeticism behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I can't recommend this album enough to people, because I think people have to listen to it. And he's already popular, but I think he deserves to be way more popular than he is. And he's getting... The other thing is, he's getting better, so who knows how much better he's going to get, because every album has been an obvious progression in terms of the maturity of both the music and the lyrics. So I can't wait to see where he's going.
Okay, and what's your other announcement? Did you have a second one?
That officially, Wes Anderson is obviously my favorite filmmaker of all time.
Yeah,
but I'm ready to announce my second favorite filmmaker of all time, who is Wong Kar-wai, who is a Hong Kong director-writer who is just now making movies in the States, so God knows what's going to happen to him. Like, he's going to become another John Woo, where he's making Broken Arrow with John Travolta and Christian Slater. But up until now, which I can't speak for his movies that are going to be coming out now that he's been Americanized, every single movie I watch of his, I absolutely love. And I can't say that for any other director other than Wes Anderson. And if you're interested in getting into his movies, I've got to recommend first, Chungking Express. Secondly, 2046. And then if you really like that one, watch In the Mood for Love, which is its companion piece. And I just watched Fallen Angels and loved it too. So if you're interested in sort of Hong Kong filmmaking or just, I guess, intelligent romantic films, brilliantly shot films, and spot-on written films that aren't gay like American films nowadays, mm-hmm. definitely check him out. Netflix, everything he's got. Because I really can't say that there's another director where every single movie I've seen him or her do, I've actually liked. I mean, could you say that for anyone else other than Wes Anderson?
Well, I was just thinking, as of recent, there's been somebody who's been on my radar for a long time, and I think he's needs to put maybe two more films under his belt, but there's one that just came out this year, and that's Michel Gondry.
Oh, yeah, he's so new, though.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He needs, because he's got The Science of Sleep is coming out this year. It's already out. I'm not sure. I never got to see. He directed that Dave Chappelle's Black Party movie.
Yeah, I saw that.
How was that? Was it well directed?
You can't. I think you can't say that. You know, he as an artist is attached to
okay.
it. Really. I mean, it's really Dave Chappelle's thing. He just ran around with a camera. I mean, it's not...
Okay, see, I wasn't sure if it was kind of like a Stop Making Sense type thing.
No,
where, you know,
nothing like that.
Not just... Okay. But he's doing The Science of Sleep, and then he's going to do Master of Space and Time, which I'm really interested to see what will happen with that film. And then before that, though, he's doing Be Kind, Rewind, and that's got Jack Black in it and a few other, you know, famous people. But in fact, the synopsis, have you read what Be Kind, Rewind is going to be about?
I don't think so.
It says, a man, Jack Black, whose brain becomes magnetized unintentionally, destroys every tape in his friend's video store. In order to satisfy the store's most loyal renter, an aging woman with signs of dementia, the two men set out to remake the lost films, which include Back to the Future, The Lion King, and RoboCop.
Oh, sweet, it's got Jack Black and Mos Def in it.
Yeah, Mos Def is really cool.
He's one of the most underrated people in Hollywood right now. And I just wish people would give him good roles, but it looks like he's getting them.
Yeah, this will be a good film for him. But in general, this is... See, Michel Gondry, he's kind of got that Charlie Kaufman-type energy to him, I think. You know, where they're making these films that are just out of the norm. You know, they're not... I don't know. They have a good sense of what's absurd, but also kind of just, like, imaginative, and it's outside the bounds. See, Wes Anderson does it in type fashion, whereas these guys are doing it in this almost, I don't know, this chaotic, you know, creativity that comes together, you know? I don't know if I can, if I'm summing it up that correctly, but either way, I think he's a guy to watch, and give him a few more movies, and I will probably be able to definitively say, if he's successful at them, I'll be able to say that he's one of my top guys.
Yeah, he's definitely... And Charlie Kaufman, I guess you could really sort of...
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the director is less important for his movies, I think.
He's just a writer who's amazing, you know?
Yeah, but I think his writing almost takes over the movies, too.
Yeah.
And I heard that Charlie Kaufman's screenplay, I think it's probably this Synecdoche New York thing or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think this one, I read a script review where the guy said that this is easily his best one yet, and it's going to be, you know, one of the most sort of revolutionary scripts to come out in a long time. So, and he's directing that one, too. So they said,
oh, that's cool.
I mean, there's been some amazing buzz about it, so that'll be exciting.
Great. Yeah, that'll be great to see what he can do direct, you know, behind the camera, not just as a writer, but actually visualizing it. Because, see, you know, like, Michel Gondry took over and did Eternal Sunshine, but, you know, it's a great script, but what helped that out was that visually Michel Gondry is able to take, you know, and do different... He's got those unique techniques that he uses within film, so mm-hmm. It'll be exciting to see all this stuff. Let's switch topics because we have a super fan of this podcast who's been begging me to come out with a finalization of a topic we started weeks ago. And that is your Guitar Hero summary. You were supposed to tell us all about your love of Guitar Hero. Now, what's interesting about this is, and you know, I maybe this isn't the case, but I'm going to assume by now, I'm going to guess that by now your love of this game has somewhat waned. You are feeling less the effects that you were, and that maybe this game has kind of taken a backseat to other games. By
yeah, I mean,
am I correct?
I feel bad because this friend of ours built up this Guitar Hero review with such huge expectations when the original intention was just to say that I got Guitar Hero and got Guitar Hero and was really enjoying it. I had nothing incredibly profound to say about it. I mean, I think it's a really cool game, and what I really like about it is that it has its own unique controller, and therefore, it's, unlike many games now, a really accessible game to people who don't play video games. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you have people in your life who aren't into video games, think they're stupid, this is a great way to sort of, you know, indoctrinate them into games, because I think anyone can have fun with it pretty quickly. I know my girlfriend doesn't play video games, and she was, you know, just as good at me at playing this game, and I've been playing video games for 25 years of my life. So, I mean, what I really have to say about the game, it is a great game.
Go ahead.
It's so much fun because knowing how to play guitar, you can see that there is so much thought behind using the controller to mimic actual guitar playing.
Mm-hmm.
They put a lot of thought in the game. It's designed so perfectly. And the only complaint I really have for it is it's really short. You know, there's only, I don't know, like 30 or some real songs. You know, you can blow through them in a good couple weeks, and then it's all just an issue of trying to finish them on harder and harder difficulty. You know, the game isn't that deep, I would say.
You know, I just had a thought in regards to, you know, you're saying that there's only 20 or 30 songs. With the new gaming systems coming out, they're going to have access. You can access the internet, I think, on these ones. They're going to have LAN capabilities, I think. And if that's the case, do you think they're going to make it so that if they come out with a Guitar Hero, really, you know, have games you can, or songs you can download to play and add to your gaming collection? Is that how it's going to work with some of these things? Because I thought that's what I was hearing. I don't know if it's with any of the current systems or if it was just a conceptualized, you know, some sort of idea that they were having about it. But I had heard that they're going to make it so that games would become almost like you would buy. It would be like, what do I want to say? Like a, not soap opera, but like serialized, you know, where you buy part two and you get them in these installations, and so the game's always updating and always evolving kind of thing.
I can't really see them doing with Guitar Hero just because you need to get licenses for the songs, and those are probably so expensive.
Well, maybe they could have it be like Guitar Hero with all the, like, you could learn how to play the bastardized versions of the songs you always hear in movies that can't afford the rights. That would be awesome, because then you'd be playing these, like, bogus type, you know, like, like Highway to Hell, slightly like it. It's missing that one extra riff or whatever, that one chord that makes it Highway to Hell. That's just my dumb idea. I'm just saying.
Yeah, but I guess the cool thing with Guitar Hero 2 is that you're going to be able to duet with somebody else, which is going to be so awesome.
Oh, wow.
That's going to be the cool. I think that's the cool thing they're doing with it. And I think it's going to be on all systems.
Well, good, because I'm getting the Nintendo Wii without question, because it's the most affordable one, and so I want to make sure that gaming is coming out for that. You know, there's games coming out for that system.
It's funny, we did it on Gameology.org, which is the other place I blog. Somebody posted, you know, what system are you getting? And every single person said they were getting a Wii, as opposed to an Xbox 360 or a PS3.
You know, my buddy at work brought up gaming systems nowadays. Whereas back in the day, there was kind of like this segregation. You were either a Genesis or a Nintendo guy. You know, you had one or the other. Rarely did people have both, because games were just like the same for all of them, whatever. But nowadays, it looks like most your has two core systems that they play, and then the older systems that they used to have. So for the new gamers, it looks to me that just based on economics, solely on economics, that it's going to be way more feasible to have an Xbox 360 because it's already out and the prices are going to come down, I'm sure, to be competitive. There's going to be that one, and then the Nintendo Wii's coming out. So people are going to have those as their core systems. When the PS3 comes out, it's going to be $600 plus, and then there's also going to be accessories. Games are going to be $60 a piece. Look, if you're thinking about getting the PS3 when it first comes out, get ready to spend $900 on just that gaming system alone. Meanwhile, you could get a Nintendo Wii and like 20 games for that price if you're willing to spend that much. And it just seems to me like it's not even a factor. Right now, I'm not budgeting so that I can afford a damn gaming system, okay? The Nintendo Wii is affordable. I can make that payment. I don't need to take out a mortgage on a home to get it. And then I can afford all the accessories, the controllers. Video games are going to be $4.99 like they've always been. They're not going to try and jack us around. I just have this feeling, PS3, yeah, maybe it'll perform, but you know what? They haven't impressed me yet with what they've been coming out with. And even if it is that great of a system, I don't know if I can ever justify spending that much money without actually buying an entire arcade game to put into my house.
Yeah, at least, you know, that's... arcade games I can see spending $600 on because they're a massive piece of equipment. Even if that cabinet is only really holding a small little monitor and, like, a circuit board, it's yeah. The fact that I get this huge-ass cabinet with it. And when you look at that huge cabinet, you're like, yeah, that was worth $600. Well, here you go, spending $600 on a PlayStation 3, and it's, like, tiny. You know, it's like a toaster.
It just doesn't seem like it'll be worth it to me.
Well, I mean, my whole point of this, and I've been arguing this on the blog and everywhere I can possibly argue it, is people have power as consumers. You know, we might seem like, you know, mindless robots, but as a consumer, you have the huge power of saying, I'm not going to buy that.
Mm-hmm.
So we can all sit down as gamers and go, the PlayStation 3 is a butt raping. It's mm-hmm. overpriced. We as gamers, you know, have a certain price threshold that we can afford and we can't afford. The PlayStation 3 is outside of that threshold, so don't fucking put it on your Capital One credit card. Don't buy it. Because if you don't buy it, the entire industry is going to stand up and go, wow, look, the PlayStation 3 failed because it was too fucking expensive. And they won't put out another $600 system. But all these fanboys rally behind the brand Sony and fucking Solid Snake and, you know, Devil May Cry and whatever, and Gran Turismo, and say, I've got to have these games, I'll pay anything. It's like, you're a fucking mindless robot. You're feeding into the problem. You are the problem. Sony is not the problem. The problem is the people who are buying this and making it worse for all of us.
Yeah. I don't know if... I mean, I can... Is the other side of the argument basically saying that, you know, yeah, Sony's filling the niche and that... Oh, I had a lapse in my brain. I mean, the other side of the argument to it is it can't be any more than the fact that, like, if this system is $700 or $800 or whatever, there is no justification for spending that much cash on the system. Now, what's the other side? On these blogs, what are they saying to justify spending that much money on games? I can't imagine them having much of an argument with this.
There's a lot of people out there who I think don't care about putting things on credit cards, and they'll just buy whatever they think is the coolest thing. You know, I can't imagine that a lot of people can afford this, because it's like, it's a ton of money for a gaming system. I mean, the people that are going out and buying this shit can't really afford it.
Well, but I was going to say, too, now with gaming demographic shifting into the mid-20s, into the, you know, mid-30s-ish area, maybe they can, because those are the people who are, maybe they have jobs and they are willing to budget for it. I'm personally not willing to do so. Or they already have kids and they're willing to buy their kids a gift, or, you know, they're you know what I'm saying? Maybe this market shift is based solely on the fact that the demographics have shifted along with, you know, so the price can go up because their market has earned more cash. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, it's probably part of that, too, is that they realize that they can exploit a whole new tier of consumer.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, you know, all of us gamers that don't make that much money just get totally fucked in the process.
Well, the way I see it is, if I'm going to have two systems, I would much prefer to be able to afford two systems and cut out the PS3 than buy a PS3 and not be able to afford... If I bought a PS3, that would be the only gaming system I could have. I couldn't imagine having to keep up to date on games for the Wii, the Xbox 360, and a PS3. It's impossible. So...
Yeah, I can't wait for the Wii launch, though. It's going to be huge. I think it's going to be bigger than the Xbox 360 just in terms of buzz and, you know...
I think so, too, but do you remember a few years ago, or was it a year ago or whenever it was, when you were home and we were watching the... I was on G4, Tech TV, and we were ragging on how shitty Nintendo's... The way they looked at E3, how they, like, other systems were sweet, and Nintendo was like, yeah, well, we got, you know, they were just running on stage looking like they're, you know, they had their heads cut off, yeah. But it looks like they actually got their act together.
Yeah, that was a funny E3, because it was like the year before the Wii really, you know, got launched for real, and, like, Xbox 360 was coming out. PlayStation 3, you know, they had a lot of fake demos of what they were doing. And the Nintendo execs would just get up on stage and be like, Nintendo!
You can have a fake dog, you know? like a virtual dog.
Check out Nintendogs! And it's like all they had.
Anything else we want to include on this? This podcast?
We
had a secret you were going to bring out last time.
You know, I already told you the secret, so it's not...
I don't know. What was it?
Well, I've actually got stories. One of my cats fell two floors onto the ground yesterday. which was unreal to watch. We live on the third story of an apartment, and when you go out the front door, you know, it's like the big stairwell, but it's an atrium stairwell. It's outdoors, you know, so there's balconies and like trees and bushes and stuff, and it's, you know, three floors down. So we were taking in groceries, and our one male cat was just exploring out on the stairwell, and we were like, whatever, you know, not a big deal. You know, he's not gonna run away. So he gets down to the second floor, and we're like, oh shit, you know, he's gonna... Let's, you know, hope he doesn't make a break for it. So my girlfriend goes down there to retrieve him from the second floor, and, like, for some reason, I think he switched into, like, you know, instinctual mode, like, I don't want your hands on me, and I'm going to evade you for fun type thing. So she goes... okay, he's on the second story of an apartment building. She goes to grab him, and he, like, jumps up on the edge of the stairwell, which leads to a direct drop into the atrium. And I think in his mind, he didn't realize that there was a drop. He thought, like, if he just jumped off the railing, that he'd land on the other side on ground. So he goes to, like, jump off the stairwell. And at the height of his jump, realizes he's floating in the air. And he, like, tries to grab the side of the apartment building with his claws. Scrapes down the side and falls two stories into the bushes below. And I'm sitting up at the third story, and I see him launch himself and then disappear in the bushes, and I'm like, oh shit, he's either dead or his leg's broken, you know?
Did he scream? Like, I hate to sound morbid, no. But I just got to hear the whole situation. Was he like, or was there just no?
No, there was no sound, but, you know, Amber was like, Vince! And he goes, hell, at the bottom. He was just in the bushes in the bottom, and he came out virtually unscathed. He shattered one of his claws, but other than that, he was fine. But you could tell when he came back, he was, like, embarrassed and traumatized, so he just went immediately to sleep. But I mean, it was a good two-story drop. It was a long drop. From my perspective, it looked like he was dead.
Oh, wow. That is so awesome. What a story Vince has to tell Luna. Luna's like, I'm all old! And Vince is like, yeah, well, I just traversed two stories of building.
But the funny thing is, I think he was doing it trying to be, like, you know, adventurous and daring, you know, like, I'm gonna evade you, and then, like, went for his jump and just totally beefed it.
That's great. Next time we do a podcast, I'll tell about my story. We ended up adopting that cat. It's not mine. It's at my girlfriend's. It'll never make it to my house. We did adopt the cat, but there was a whole slew of garbage that went on post-adoption that I will discuss later. And you guys can, when I bring it up, I wouldn't mind hearing anyone else's opinions on what ended up happening and whether they think it was the right decision or not. But I'll bring it up next time.
All right, we could just end this podcast, then we're at 35 minutes.
Okay, cool. One other quick thing. Bill Clinton dominated Chris Wallace on that interview.
Yeah.
Just wanted to bring that up and say everyone should give props to Bill Clinton for being above the slanderous and bullshit tactics that Fox News and other media outlets use on a continual basis, and actually putting him in his place. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I was happy about that. So that's another podcast in the bag, and that was the first one in like 2 months, maybe.
It seems like a long time.
Yeah. So, all right. See you guys later. But I was on the hatch.
I was on the avalanche. You have been listening to This Just In, recorded and distributed on October 2nd, 2006. For more information, visit www.the-means.com. Virginia to Illinois, my home. He said, I knew you had it in you, the mind to make his own.